All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. I'm Amanda Martinez, and I work at Texas State University. Mm-hmm. And this is, my guest today is R.T. Floyd, and obviously legendary green coat. Anything else you'd like to add about your history?
Well, I'm not sure what's been said, but I've certainly had a rich time in the profession. I've enjoyed it very much. It's been, I'm excited to go to work every day of the week, and many days I did, 7 days a week, and I really enjoy it. Look forward to it. There's so many opportunities to help people primarily, but to help students as well, and I enjoy that every day.
It's fantastic. It's great to be able to go to work and enjoy what you do every day, right? Not everybody can say that.
Exactly, and I really have trouble, I guess, sympathizing with people who don't, because I've enjoyed this since the ninth grade, and it's been, I've never wanted to do anything else.
What sparked your interest in the ninth grade? Did you just stumble upon it in high school? How did that all start?
Well, that's a long story. I don't know if you want to get into it, because I didn't have any background in athletics at all. And I went to a new school that had a rich tradition in athletics. And
okay.
My parents wanted to get me to quit being a wallflower and that type of thing, and to be more involved, and tried to convince me to do something along that line. But I basically said no. And the responsibility appealed to me. The principal and that type of thing. He said, there's a lot of responsibility involved in this job. And I, of course, started out as a manager. I slept on it a few days and said, it kind of appealed to me, even though I didn't know what I was getting into at all.
I don't know that any of us really know what we're getting into until we're kind of immersed in it, right?
Right. So I started that the new school the first year, and as the year went by, there was only one coach, and he was doing the taping and so forth, and many of the athletes really didn't like that, the way he did it, so I started doing it, and one thing led to another, and they paid me to go to Kramer camps and courses and that type of thing. And
that's fantastic.
Yep.
That's fantastic. Awesome. So how has your time been here at the convention? Have you been here the whole time?
Been here since Saturday. It's been great. It's been
great. Awesome. Seen a bunch of people networking, seen some old friends from...
Absolutely, yeah. That's the thing. This is kind of like Christmas to me every year. I've been to every convention since 1975, and can't imagine not coming to a convention. It's one of the highlights of my year for sure, to see everybody that I've known over the years. And you come here, and it's so big nowadays, you can be here with people that you've known, but you never see them sometimes. But eventually you get to see everybody if you keep coming back every year.
Yeah, that's true. Do you have any, you've been, obviously, again, Green Coat, you've been doing this for a while. Do you have advice for any of, our young people who are maybe just out of grad school or in undergrad, maybe trying to figure out, should I go to convention? Should I be a part of convention? Any words of wisdom for them?
Well, I can't imagine. By being here every year, I'm a huge believer in going there. I think if you're going to be a professional, and I know there's reasons sometimes that some people cannot go because of work commitments or maybe the funding, that type of thing.
Sure.
But I think if this is going to be your profession, and it is a profession, it's not a job, it's a profession. And so if you're going to be in this profession, you need to be where the action is, and this is certainly where the action is at the NATA convention each year. I think people need to make this one of their high priorities if you're going to be in the profession, to try to come here, if at all possible. And I understand there's situations where you can't. And the same thing goes for the district meetings and the state meetings. And that's where you see people, and that's where the involvement is. Certainly you can get your continuing education units through other means, and those are fine. It's good and all. But there's so much to be learned and so many things that you talk about in the hallway.
Gotcha.
And on the exhibit floor here and that type of thing, you just can't do without being there.
That makes total sense. You got to invest in your profession to kind of see it move forward and be a part of that moving forward.
Right. And it's a two-way thing. As you said, invest in the profession. You need to invest in the profession. And part of the investment is your time being involved with others and sharing yourself and the things that you've learned, the things that you've experienced and all with others, so they can benefit from that. And the bottom line, of course, is improved patient care.
Gotcha. You know, in your career, we're just talking about investing. And when did that light bulb kind of go off for you that, yes, this is what I need to invest in. This is for me.
I didn't seek out necessarily an opportunity to become involved other than just going to the meetings, but because I did go every year to, for example, our district meeting in District 9,
mm-hmm.
some of the leaders back at the time saw that and said, well, you know, RT's here every year and we have this need on this committee. And so he chose me to lead at that time the convention site selection committee.
Okay.
So that's kind of my very first involvement. And that, of course, over time changed to other things, got involved in our student workshop. I started my service for the NATA. My very first was the, I think we called it the Audiovisual Committee at the time, which later became the Multimedia Committee, which is no longer in existence. But that was, I think I was on that committee for 14 years, which nobody stays on committees nowadays that long.
I was going to say, that seems like a record. Yep. I feel like the people that I know in committees and stuff, they kind of bounce around some. Yep. So 14 years, that's a long stint. Okay. So for the people who are, again, trying to invest, trying to figure out, you know, what committee do I join? Mm-hmm. How do I join? Where do I start? Like, is it, you know, some people might think it's kind of a scary process to try and, you know, start that conversation. Or do you start with an email? Do you just bump into somebody who's walking out of a meeting? Like, what would you suggest for
I think it's a combination of things. Certainly, I would encourage the person who's trying to start out to be in touch with their state leadership, their state presidents and state officers, but also the district leadership. Get to know them by name and so they can put a face with that name and all.
Gotcha.
Email certainly works great and all, but it's a face-to-face relationship, which I think is helpful as well.
Absolutely.
Having a well-prepared resume, you never know when an opportunity may come along. Being prepared. Many times when you apply or ask today for a position, there may not be one that's right there for you this time.
Right.
So I would encourage people to be persistent. And you need to take something that is that you have passion about, but at the same time, it may not be the thing that you're most passionate about to start with.
Gotcha.
But sometimes
so it's
got to
be something you're vaguely interested in.
Right.
Don't just sign up for something that you have no interest or
right. Absolutely.
Kind of not
and
be
I think
a part
as
of.
A young person, sometimes you're not always sure what you're passionate about. You
Absolutely.
Get involved in things, and then you say, "Well, this is something I really like doing."
Agree.
And all.
Yeah.
And
can't
that's,
say that
and
I know exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where I'm going.
And that's the way it was with me. With the, you know, I've supported the NATU Foundation, for example, throughout the time of the Five Nation, but I never was very much involved until I got a call one day that asking me to be the District 9 chair on that. And I said, well, what do I do? You know, what do I need to do? I'm not sure I'm suitable for this and all. And, you know, why do you want me? That type of thing.
Right.
And thought about it for a week or so and decided to do it. And I couldn't have been more pleased and all with the opportunity over the years.
Really? So what... What kind of changes did you make? What did you do with District 9, you know, kind of after you got that title?
Well, we tried to make one thing we did in District 9 is, you know, my job was to represent the NATA Foundation to District 9 and back and forth and all.
Okay.
But one thing that I took it upon myself because I really enjoyed the meeting so much is not only took our foundation booth to the District 9 meeting each year, but we have 7 states in District 9.
Okay.
And so... In 2002, I started taking that foundation booth to each of the state meetings. And so I went to every state meeting with a rare exception. There's a couple of times we had 2 state meetings that directly conflicted with each other, so I couldn't be in 2 cities at the same time.
Oh, gotcha.
I think 1 year it conflicted with an educators conference or something. But as much as I could over the years that I was in that position at all, we had appearance at each of the state meetings for that time period, about 10 years.
Wow.
Yep.
That's a lot of traveling.
State meetings, and I tell you, the thing about it is I hope I benefited the foundation some by being there, but it certainly benefited me by all the people I got to meet and all the attending all the conferences and workshops. Mm-hmm. And you never know when you're going to be at a particular meeting or a conference or a talk or whatever and pick up some little tidbit that can make a big difference in the future of our profession or in the future of a patient's life.
Absolutely. Did you see kind of the bridge being gapped every time that you would go as a representative of the foundation? Like, people kind of now understood the foundation and what it was for and all that kind of stuff?
I think so. And that was the message we tried to get across is to, you know, some people have they hear the title NATA Research and Education Foundation, and some people say, well, I'm not really involved in research.
Right.
But that's okay.
They kind of think that's all it is.
Exactly. It's a lot more to it. And whether you're involved in doing research or not, all of us as a profession benefit from research. And so you're a consumer of that research. Our patients are consumers of that research.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, we need, that's the basis for propelling this profession forward and improving patient care is research and all, and getting outcomes data and that type of thing, which is a big, big need. So there is a, it does pertain to all of us and all. Just like the MPI number and all pertains to everybody that's in this profession, everyone needs to have one.
Absolutely.
And so, so I think we, over time, what I try to do to start with is to educate people what the NATA Foundation is and what it's about.
Yeah. And how you want to give us a little brief, you know, I don't know that you can make it as brief as possible, but what is the NATA Foundation for those people who are listening or walking around, maybe just think it is just this research-based thing? What would you say it is actually really about?
So it's about, as I said, advancing the profession and all through research and education. And to do that, we're the philanthropic arm of the NATA in our profession and all.
Mm-hmm.
So we obviously need support in terms of donor dollars and all to do that and all, because it takes a lot of money to fund all the different research projects we have and to fund the scholarships.
Sure.
And, you know, we try to utilize those resources and try to be very good stewards of our contributors and all, and so mm-hmm. that we can turn those dollars into more dollars and more research,
right, absolutely,
and more scholarships and that type of thing. So, you know, it's our responsibility to do that, and it's our responsibility to make members and people involved in our profession know about that, so that mm-hmm. hopefully they can, you know, contribute in some way.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and I'd like to have everyone who's involved in this profession to make a conscious thought, to actually take a moment each year, take a few moments each year and make a decision, you know, what can I do to support the NATA Foundation this year? We're not asking for millions of dollars. That's great when we can get those. But if everyone can just make
really
a conscious
effort. Some research,
you know,
forward,
what, yeah,
huh?
Yeah. What can you do this year to support the NATA Foundation? And that may be just an outright contribution.
Sure.
That may be coming to some of our fun events. We have a fun event right here tonight at the Wild West Casino night. We'll have a great time with that. We have a fun run tomorrow in a 5K.
Okay.
So we always have events. We try to have events at the district meetings as well that
okay.
can people can have fun and be engaged. And then we have a big social media presence too. So
okay.
The Facebook.
Where are you at on? So Facebook, Instagram.
Facebook.
Snapchat for all these young people.
We're not on Snapchat. We're
not
on
yet.
Facebook and the Instagram and the Twitter.
Twitter.
Yes.
Okay. You're more ahead of than I am because I don't even have a Twitter account. I don't know that I'd have anything to say there. But okay. That's great. So others. So again, so be a part of the foundation. That's what you're encouraging. Encouraging professionalism, and it's not all about, yes, we would like funds, but however, get involved and kind
right.
of meet people and be a part of this profession.
Right. Yeah, we do other things that's not necessary. For example, we have the faculty mentor, so that young junior faculty members can be matched up with a senior faculty member to help them, and the senior faculty member will serve as a mentor for them across the country and all to help them advance their career, advance their scholarship, advance their, you know, education
some
and so forth.
Awesome.
We're trying to put people together like that.
That's great. Because I think, again, it's, you know, young professional, it's always great mm-hmm. to say, mm-hmm. you know, I have this mentor here and this mentor here, and it's great to have some guidance and mm-hmm. kind of see, follow a path, and they kind of help you create your own path. You know, I feel like any good mentor would do that. So as far as, you know, this research stuff, is there anything interesting you guys are working on right now that seems like, hey, this is going to be cutting edge, or hey, if this pans out, this is really going to change athletic training for us? Maybe patient outcomes or
we have funded, and we've actually funded up to $1 million now in outcomes research. Some of that's still being conducted. Some of it was just awarded last year. We don't have the results of that yet, but we're
okay.
excited about that. We have each year several grants at different levels, and some of our very good research has come even from the doctoral level. We have master's grants of $1,000, some very good work there. We have the doctoral grants that are $2,500, and we have our general grants, which are $50,000, up to $50,000 plus.
How?
You know, other expenses go along with that, and then we have education grants too. So that's not what we're limited to. That's our main
sure.
focus and all. But we're always seeking opportunities to do additional research and additional, you know, funds that may match up with that and all. So we're open to corporate entities and that type of thing that may have an interest in something that we can support and
that makes sense as we kind
yeah.
of branch out in that area and whatnot.
But some very good research has come out of what's been done there. We have those research grants posted on our website and what they've been about and so forth. Several of those research grants have summaries that are like 2 pages long that can kind of,
give a little insight into what's going.
Just a quick down and dirty of what's this research about, what's accomplished and so forth, and how it's going to affect, you know, a daily practice.
Absolutely.
We also have the free communications program here at this convention each year, which has grown tremendously. I can't remember the numbers right now, but it has grown significantly in the number of applications we get, or submissions rather, and the number of people that that awarded those that present. We have five categories there, and some of that's very outstanding research. In fact, many of my colleagues say some of the best things they get out of coming to this convention is going to the hall and seeing the posters and the presentations that's presented at Free Communications.
Absolutely. I did my first year out of grad school, and I actually just ran into one of the doctors who helped me do it. We did a poster. And it was pretty interesting to see everything that's out there, and you kind of meet everybody doing their research. And, you know, ours was just a little, you know, systematic review that was a starting point for our thesis work. But it is definitely, if people can go out there and see it and kind of talk to people, it's interesting to see what people are actually thinking about and researching. It's not just, you know, is tape better than an ankle brace when taping? It's, you know, it's the patient outcomes. There's way more to it now, which is kind of good to see how everything's, you know, moving and expanding. So we have a few more minutes here before we kind of wrap up everything. So anything else you'd like to tell us about, like what it's maybe a great little anecdote of, this is a fantastic story or a hilarious story of me and my history at this one university. It's funny little... If I ever run into R.T. Floyd, I'm definitely going to remind him or ask him about this one time this one thing happened.
Well, I'm not very good at telling stories, and certainly not very good at funny stories, but...
I think you're doing just fine.
I think one thing that maybe nowadays is maybe unique about my past is certainly not the way it's done now, is my very first day at the University of West Alabama as a freshman, I was a head athletic trainer. I was the only athletic trainer.
I was going to say, was there more than you, just you?
There were no returning athletic training students from the previous year. There was no one else. And so my first day on the job, I had the sole responsibility for the health care of our team, along with a physician who should have long been retired by that time. Right. I had done this 4 years in high school, but I saw more Rangers in a week than I saw the whole time in a particular year in high school. And you know, with 2 days or 3 days football back then.
Yeah.
And so it was a scary experience. I learned a lot very quick, and I got really concerned for after a very short time. What if I mess up? And what if I do the wrong thing and one of these players is hurt and not cared for properly? And so I kind of got concerned about that, and some of the seniors on the team appreciated what I was trying to do. And they kind of got the word that I was –
You cared.
Yeah. Well, they knew I cared, I think, because of what I did. But they thought that I might be anticipating leaving or something.
Oh,
because
they're actually
worried.
Because
I was worried about doing it. And so they came to me and said, you know, you're doing a great job. We appreciate you. And you can't leave because, look, who's behind you? There's no one else here. So that was very encouraging.
Wow.
And I did. I made some mistakes. We all make mistakes. I still make mistakes today. I try not to make the same ones twice. But that was a tremendous opportunity for me to grow, because I got firsthand experience seeing so many things. And I was in a position where I had to make decisions. I didn't have much backup at all. I didn't have, you know, much in the way of close by physicians that could help me.
Sure.
I did establish that first year my relationship with Dr. Jim Andrews has been so helpful to so many millions of athletes worldwide and so forth.
Say,
and all.
The go-to.
And he, I can remember, he came over his plane and flew in and says, here's my card. Call me anytime, day or night, that you need me. I'm 4 hours across the state.
That's a fantastic connection to start with.
Yeah,
right
it
there,
absolutely
right?
was. And I did. I called him, and we started transporting athletes across the state to him. We'd oftentimes get to his house. We'd have a football practice that ended at 6 p.m. and we'd leave with a station wagon load of 8 or 9 hurt players. Mm-hmm. We'd drive to his house in Columbus, Georgia at the time, and he would examine them in his living room.
Really?
And then
he's got it right there.
Right there in his living room.
Right there in the living room.
At 11 o'clock at night, his time. And then whoever needed surgery, he'd just put them in a spare bedroom, and then we'd drive back and be back in time for class the next morning and all.
Hey, Talk about like patient care right there.
Yeah, and that's a true story. I cannot tell you how many times we did that over the years that back then and all. But that was a great opportunity for me to learn with his help and learn by doing and having to do and all.
Wow. And just to kind of on a slight tangent, you know, in your story, you kind of talked about how these athletes, you know, they thanked you for what you did, you know, and I'd say some people who kind of struggle with athletic training sometimes and investing are like, you know, sometimes it's a thankless job. So what would you say to those people who kind of have that battle, knowing that not every athlete is going to thank you every single day or not every coach or, you know, those thank yous are few and far between?
Well, I think if you go about your job right, you're going to, if you do a good job and you really care about what you're doing, mm-hmm. then enough people will recognize that and express their appreciation. You're certainly going to have people who are not going to appreciate it at all and never say thank you. That's part of it. That's life. That's no matter what profession you're in, that's the way it is sometimes and all.
Essentially, a way to look at it. So it's not just athletic training. Yeah, it could be anything.
Right. You need to take the satisfaction in doing a good job and knowing that whether you get recognized for it or not, you made a difference. You made a difference in this person. You got them back on the field sooner. You got them back to work sooner. You prevented them from having a more involved injury, that type of thing. So that's where the satisfaction needs to come from. It's not from the thank yous. Those are nice to get. Yeah, that's where it needs to come from. This needs to be something that you really get the pleasure from benefiting people. This is a people profession. And quite honestly, if you don't like people, then you don't need to be in this profession.
It's probably not for you, right?
Yep.
It's probably that's a very true statement. Absolutely. So as we wrap up here, if anybody would like to get a hold of you personally, do you want to give any kind of email out
or
how they could get a hold of you?
Well, I'm always accessible. In fact, I have my cell phone and my office phone and my email all on our website, so it can easily be found on the internet with a simple search. But it's my email is rtf@uwa.edu, and my office is 205-652-3714, and my cell is 205-499-8670. Glad to help anybody anytime I can.
All right. So he's totally accessible to anybody who kind of wants to get a hold of him or talk to him for anything.
Yep.
RT Floyd, it's been a pleasure. I have absolutely heard of you as the legend, and I'm very excited that I got to talk to you today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.